Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, December 14th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Viruses Impact Minimal on MISD Scores. Data shows district fared better than state in pandemic-driven learning loss. By Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD outperformed the state average when it came to minimizing lost learning through the COVID pandemic. During the district's board meeting and workshop Saturday, Midland ISD leaders learned that preliminary STAR data analysis showed the following. While reading scores across the state dropped from 47% at least meeting grade level in 2019 to 43% in 2021, MISD scores actually improved from 37% to 38% during the time span. Math scores fell 15 points from 50% at least meeting grade level in 2019 to 35% in 2021. MISD scores fell 7 points during the same time, falling from 42% to 35%. Those scores reflect all tested grade levels. Board members and MISD leaders heard that across the state, COVID-19 erased years of improvement in reading and math, and that economically disadvantaged students experienced greater learning loss in both reading and math. They also learned that remote learning appeared to contribute to learning loss regardless of household income loss. Midland ISD officials made the decision to put students back on campus early in the 2020-21 school year. Data provided to the board and MISD also showed some similarities between MISD and state results. The state showed 8% growth in students at least meeting grade level in reading from 2012 to 2019. Midland ISD showed 6% growth. The state showed 16% growth in math during the same time period. Midland ISD's growth was the same, 16%. Midland ISD data also showed the following about the district's results during the same period. Reading scores improved 4 points between 2015 and 2016 and 1 point between 2016 and 2021. Midland ISD's standing after the 2021 school year is that reading scores are still as high as they have been going back to 2012. Math scores improved from 32% in 2016 to 42% in 2019. They dropped to 35% between 2019 and 2021. Midland ISD's standing after the 2021 school year is the lowest going back to 2016. State data shows that reading scores are the lowest going back to 2017 and math scores are the lowest going back to 2013. This article is entitled Council to Mull Next Step for Hotel. Officials to Consider Allowing Negotiations for Incentive Package. By Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council on Tuesday will decide to authorize the city manager to negotiate a development agreement with De Palma Hotels and Resorts regarding a potential hotel in downtown Midland. In November, Brian De Palma with the Dallas-based De Palma Hotels and Resorts provided an overview of creating a boutique hotel to the heart of the downtown area. He stated at the time he is looking for incentives to help with a $25 million project that will bring a 93-room boutique hotel to the 100 block of South Lorraine Street. He added the equity is raised. It is a privately funded project, but that he wanted the city to consider an incentive package that represents 16% of the total project budget. A hotel occupancy grant of $4 million would be paid out for approved expenditures, including 100% of ad valorem taxes paid and, quote, business personal property tax, unquote, for 5 years, and then 75% over the following 5 years. A city sales tax rebate of 50% for 7 years. A 50% city sales tax rebate having to do with construction and associated fees. The waiving of other impact, permit, and review fees. Developers are not seeking a cash incentive. The hotel would be tentatively called the Thomas and would convert a building that the developer said was built in 1927, making it, quote, the oldest high-rise in West Texas, unquote. The plan would include rehabilitation of a current building and construction of new rooms to bring the room total to 93. The hotel would be a Hilton brand, like the current hotel downtown, the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel Midland Plaza. Developers also said it would be part of the Hilton's Tapestry brand, which allows developers to embrace the independent nature of a hotel. Developers told the council they have been involved with 70 properties and have another 80 properties in the pipeline. The hotel would have a restaurant that serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner, some meeting spaces, and valet parking. An average daily rate of $150 was expected in the beginning. De Palma said the hotel will not be a big box convention hotel. De Palma stated that once developers receive approval for the project, construction could be completed within 24 months. This article is entitled U.S. Expects Permian Oil Output to Hit Record by Sheila Tobin, Bloomberg. Crude production in the Permian Basin is expected to surpass a pre-pandemic high this month as a rebound in the U.S. shale industry fuels activity in its most prolific patch. Supplies from the basin, which straddles West Texas and New Mexico, is projected to reach 4.96 million barrels a day in December, the Energy Information Administration said Monday in a report. The current record of 4.91 million barrels a day was set in March 2020. The agency also sees supplies exceeding 5 million barrels a day next month for the first time in data going back to 2007. Crude production from the Permian exceeds that of each OPEC member except Saudi Arabia, underscoring its importance in balancing the oil market. Its low production costs make it appealing to drillers, with most producers focusing their U.S. plans for expansion on the sprawling oil patch at the expense of other shale basins. U.S. shale oil producers will increase capital spending by nearly 20% to $83.4 billion in 2022, the highest since the pandemic began, according to Rystad Energy. Still, that's about a third lower than forecast levels in 2019, indicating that companies are more disciplined about basing production decisions on near-term changes in crude prices. ExxonMobil Corporation and Chevron Corporation have both made the Permian a key focus for next year, even as they keep overall capital spending near multi-year lows. Chevron plans to spend $3 billion in the basin next year, 50% higher than this year's budget, and about a fifth of its global total. Even with the Permian's growth, total U.S. oil output is still a long way from full recovery. Pioneer Natural Resources Company said last week that U.S. drillers will need half a decade for nationwide production to reach pre-pandemic levels. This article is entitled Espinoza Announces Run for County Treasurer Seat from Staff Reports. Mary Ann Espinoza announced Monday that she will run for treasurer of Midland County. Espinoza reported that she has lived in Midland since 2010 and serves as chief deputy of the treasurer's office. During her 10 years working for the county, Espinoza also worked with Judge Zimmerman as a clerk. She also reported working in the county attorney's office in Tom Green County, San Angelo area, for 7 years. Mitzi Baker, the current treasurer, announced this weekend that she will not run for another term. Espinosa stated she will run as a Republican. Over the years, I have had the honor to work alongside our current treasurer and many other great people in my department, Espinosa wrote. During this time, I have gained a plethora of knowledge and skills. The positions I have held throughout my employment have allowed me to build my experience and my passion for creating a great treasurer's office for my community. I am confident that the unique skill sets I have gained will allow me the opportunity to push Midland County to be successful in all aspects. Espinosa wrote that she has volunteered with the Midland Soup Kitchen and at Stonegate Fellowship. She wrote that she wanted to continue to serve the residents and employees of Midland County by continuing the long tradition of hard work ethic, transparency, and accountability the office has held. Having the opportunity to serve and lead our city as the treasurer is a task I am entirely capable of, Espinosa said. My passion and integrity may be a looking glass into my commitment to our community, this position, and the future of Midland. This is the community from the front page. This article is entitled, County Treasurer Baker Says She Won't Seek Another Term, from Staff Reports. Midland County Treasurer Mitzi Baker will not seek re-election. Baker is a 32-year veteran employee of Midland County, beginning her work there in 1989. She served as administrative assistant to Sheriff Gary Painter for more than 14 years and then ran the office of county treasurer, winning election to the position in 2004. She was re-elected four more times. Baker was elected the outstanding Texas County Treasurer by the County Treasurers Association of Texas in 2014, and then elected as president of that association in 2020. I have been unbelievably blessed to work at a job I love for all 32 years with Midland County, Baker wrote in a press release. I've decided I will not seek re-election to another term and move on to a new chapter in my life as the Lord directs. I have grandchildren to watch and play with, and am looking forward to so many things. Thank you to the citizens of Midland County who have entrusted me with this work for all these years. I am and always have been humbled by that. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled Methane Plumes Spotted Above East Texas by Josh Saul, Bloomberg. A satellite spotted two plumes of planet-warming methane rising from a patch of East Texas that's home to multiple oil and gas operations. State regulators said they couldn't identify the source of the methane, which is the primary component of natural gas and traps 80 times as much heat than carbon dioxide in its first two decades in the atmosphere. Stemming methane leaks and stopping unnecessary releases is one of the most powerful steps that can be taken to slow global warming. Learn more about the planet-warming power of methane. The two plumes were detected by geoanalytics company Kairos SAS using a November 29 satellite observation from the European Space Agency. Kairos estimated that the plumes originated from different sources east of Dallas, about 15 miles apart, in an area dotted with fossil fuel infrastructure. The plumes had estimated release rates of 21 tons per hour and 24 tons per hour. It's not possible to determine the duration of the leaks because satellites only capture one moment in time. If they lasted an hour, the two clouds combined would equal the average annual emissions from about 800 cars running in the U.S. Some methane plumes found by satellites can be tracked to specific sources, especially if a company reveals that it released gas at that location at that time. But without anyone stepping forward, the source of such plumes, where multiple companies are operating in a small area, can remain a mystery. On-the-ground monitoring is also sometimes used to link releases to specific producers. Companies operating pipelines nearby include Boardwalk Pipelines LP, Enbridge Inc., and Atmos Energy Corporation. Boardwalk said it didn't have any leaks or releases that could have caused the clouds. An Enbridge representative said the company isn't aware of any such release. Atmos didn't respond to multiple requests for comment. Texas regulators also weren't able to identify the source of the methane plumes. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality wasn't aware of the plumes, a representative said. A spokesperson for the Railroad Commission of Texas, the primary state regulator of the oil and natural gas industry, referred questions to the TCEQ. This article is entitled, Saudi Arabia Warns Against Shorting Prices, by Matthew Martin and Vivian Nirem, Bloomberg. Saudi Arabia's energy minister warned traders against shorting oil prices, saying OPEC Plus could react quickly to any fall in prices. OPEC Plus, a 23-nation group led by Saudi Arabia and Russia, decided on December 2nd to raise daily oil output by 400,000 barrels in January. But it kept the meeting open and said it would be able to reconvene at short notice to change course. "I call my friends every day. We chat and share notes," Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman said in Riyadh, referring to fellow OPEC ministers. So the meeting is truly not suspended. It continues to be in session. That strategy has helped bolster crude prices by making traders warier of taking short positions, according to analysts. While oil soared about 45% this year, with economies rebounding from the worst of the coronavirus pandemic, it slumped more than 10% on November 26th, the day after Thanksgiving. That was mainly due to the discovery of the Omicron variant. Brent crude has since recovered some of its losses, trading around $75 a barrel on Monday. This is the Nation page. This article is entitled, Omicron Raises Concerns, But Not Precautions, by Kathleen Foody, Associated Press. Chicago. As the Omicron variant sparks worldwide fears of renewed COVID-19 outbreaks, Americans' worries about infection are again on the rise, but fewer say they are regularly wearing masks or isolating compared with the beginning of the year. A new poll conducted by the Associated Press and NORC Center for Public Affairs Research shows that 36% of Americans now say they are very or extremely worried that they or a family member will be infected with the virus, up from 25% who said the same in late October. Another 31% now say they're somewhat worried. The percentage saying they are highly worried is slightly lower now than it was in August as the Delta variant was taking hold, and still below the level of concern Americans expressed through much of 2020, as deaths and case counts varied widely across regions and seasons. Although most of those who are vaccinated still say they're at least somewhat worried about infections, 55% of those who are unvaccinated say they have little or no worry. Roughly 8 in 10 Democrats say they're at least somewhat worried, compared with about half of Republicans. The poll also shows that 57% of Americans now say they're wearing masks always or often when around other people outside their homes, a slight increase from 51% in August. But that's well below the 82% who said the same in an AP-NORC poll conducted in February and March, before many Americans had a chance to get vaccines. Dr. Tara Kirk-Sell, a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, said people become less likely to alter their lives as a threat becomes familiar to them. "We've been dealing with COVID for a long time, and we're going to be dealing with it for a long time," she said. "People are going to want to do things. So the focus should be on how can we help people think through those risks rather than saying, don't do X, or focusing on getting to zero risk." Those calculations differ from one person to another, Sell said. For instance, parents of children younger than five who are not yet approved for COVID-19 vaccines, or people living with elderly relatives may have a lower tolerance for risking infection. Americans as a whole remain much less likely than they were in the spring to report that they're always or often avoiding non-essential travel, staying away from large groups, or avoiding other people as much as possible. But the poll shows that those who are vaccinated are far more likely than the unvaccinated to say they are still practicing those behaviors. This is the opinion page. This article is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled, Midland ISD Needs to End Rotating Door of Superintendents, by Stuart Doreen, editor. This past weekend, the Midland ISD board had its most significant board meeting for understanding the academic direction of the new administration. How many people from the public/community attended the meeting that went from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday? One. The agenda for the meeting was posted on the district's website days in advance. Topics included a public comment period. There were no public comments. District presentations about the academic year in revenue, a profile of the MISD learner, and a State of Texas performance review. Lastly, there was a workshop about Lone Star governance. We will have coverage from the meeting. It will include a story in Tuesday's edition about Midland ISD's academic performance during the pandemic and how it compared to the state. There will be an item later this week about the most important question asked during the meeting and the response from newer, higher-level members of Superintendent Angelica Ramsey's administration. In my conversations with some about education in Midland, I have joked that there are actually 3 to 5 of us that actually put academic outcomes as the number one challenge that this district faces. The funny thing is I might not be far off. We get fired up about things like school names, a different academic calendar, and the potential move of a girls' school. I am not writing that those aren't important issues. They are. But we keep finding other things to grab our attention, and academics suffers because of it. Once we move beyond the health and safety of our students, our community's collective attention should move to academic outcomes. That doesn't always happen. And let me be clear here. This message is for everyone in Midland. There are those who have the reputation for supporting just about anything the administration does, and they were equally absent from the discussion taking place. Again, the most important discussion when it came to academics since Ramsey came to Midland. Just like when this board jumped in with both feet into Lone Star governance on a cold January day in 2017, we could count the number of people there from the community on one hand. On Saturday, one could count that interest on one finger. Here's the deal. This administration is being bombarded with problems that come from having to follow superintendents that weren't capable of leading an older district in need of academic revival. At the same time, current leaders are being bombarded from many wanting to see their particular issue solved now. Let me add one more thing. Anyone who sat in on the meeting or watched it online, during, or after the fact must come to the conclusion that we have the best set of academic leaders in place at Midland ISD in years, if not more. I write that because we can continue to ram our own interests ahead of what they are trying to do, but we risk having them throw up their hands saying they've had enough. Midland ISD is a revolving door of education leaders that hasn't served this district well. For those counting, that is 5 permanent or interim superintendents since the beginning of 2016. That is not conducive to putting a district on the path toward respectability academically. It also will continue to put the district behind when it comes to facilities improvements needed now. We are not going to undo the mountain of problems that exists in this district overnight. We are not going to be able to undo any decisions made in the last 5 to 10 years. We are not going to be able to make COVID go away. We cannot act like school finance makes all other outcomes impossible. We cannot make the bond election of 2019 a litmus test on where one stands on education. But we can decide if we are on the side of improving educational outcomes. We can be engaged in the process of improving academics in the community. We can give this new superintendent a chance to show us what she and her team can do. Or we can continue a cycle that hasn't served the community well for the better part of 15 years. This is the obituary column. Tuesday, December 14th. Betty Jean Scott Taylor. Betty Jean Taylor Scott passed away peacefully at her home Friday, December 10th, at the age of 86, after a courageous battle with cancer. She was born in Nolan County, Texas, July 26, 1935, to Milton and Louise Taylor. Betty married Thornton Scott November 1, 1955. Survivors include two sons, Mike Scott and wife Peggy of Ruidosa, New Mexico, and Tony Scott of Albuquerque, New Mexico. She was preceded in death by her parents, sisters Goldie Davis, Virginia Avant, Jewel Stevens, Helen Latray, and Geraldine Workman, and her loving husband Thornton. Graveside services will be 2 p.m. Tuesday, December 14th at the Garden of Memory Cemetery in Sweetwater, with Betty's good friend Bill Reese officiating. The family suggests memorials to the American Cancer Society of Midland or Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home in Stanton. Gayla Irene Morris. Gayla Irene Morris, 56, of Midland, passed into the arms of her Savior on December 3rd. Her funeral service was held at the Kelview Heights Baptist Church Chapel on Monday, December 6th at 10 a.m. She was buried in Roswell, New Mexico. Gayla was born on July 28, 1965, in Concord, California, to James Doyle and Geneva Whitehead Morris. Gayla is preceded in death by her dad, James Doyle Morris, and is survived by her mother, Geneva Morris, brothers Stanley, Renee Morris, Dan, Debbie Morris, David, Lynn Morris, and Dwayne, Angela Morris, and sister Doyla, Bill Bramblett. She is loved by all her nieces, nephews, and friends. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Joe Evans. Joe Evans, 88, of Big Spring, passed away Saturday, December 11th. Funeral services will be 10 a.m. Tuesday, December 14th at the First Baptist Church in Coahoma. Interment will follow at Trinity Memorial Park. She was born December 21, 1932, in Pampa, Texas, and married Don Evans October 7, 1949, in Pampa. He preceded her in death November 25, 2009. Survivors include two sons, Ricky Don Evans and wife Kim of Midland, Randy Lee Evans and wife Carrie of Big Spring, one daughter, Kathy Jo Page, and husband Spot, 10 grandchildren and 28 great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents, A.D. and Mary Cotton, and a brother, Tim Duckworth. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Lita C. Kirby. Lita C. Kirby, 93, of Big Spring, joined her loving husband in the arms of Christ on December 12th. A graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. on December 15th at Trinity Memorial Park Cemetery in Big Spring. Lita was born on April 25, 1928, in Big Spring, Texas, to Nellie and Dilworth Shorty Thompson. She married the love of her life, Milton Kirby, on October 21, 1947. Lita is survived by her son, Milton, Lynn, Nancy, Kirby, and daughter, Kathy Ann Richard Murray, 7 grandchildren, and numerous great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, nephews, and nieces. Lita is preceded in death by her husband, parents, all her brothers and sisters, and great-granddaughter Zara Kemper. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Richard J. Rosebery. Richard J. Rosebery. Richard J. Rosebery, 86, of Dallas, bravely battled and overcame several serious health challenges and types of cancer. In the end, stage 4 lung cancer took him mercifully within 2 weeks. Dick Rosebery is survived by his beloved wife of 55 years, Charlene, his daughter, Dare, and his son, Jay, daughter-in-law, Aaron, and grandchildren, Reese and Christopher. Dick will be laid to rest by a lovely stream in Whispering Waters area of Restland Cemetery. On Monday, December 13th, there will be visitation from 3 to 5 p.m., and then the next Tuesday, December 14th, visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. At 2 p.m., a commemorative service will be held in the Memorial Chapel of Restland Funeral Home, located at 13005 Greenville Avenue in Dallas, and streamed via a link on his webpage at www.restlandfuneralhome.com. After the service, guests will be invited to a reception to celebrate Dick's life from 3:30 to 5:30. People are welcome to attend any or all events. In lieu of flowers at this time, the following organizations would benefit from your generosity: the Dallas Arboretum and Botanical Gardens, College of Engineering, Purdue University, or St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Death notices. Alexander Nicholas Tenorio. Alexander Nicholas Tenorio, 33, passed away on Wednesday, December 8th. A rosary will take place at 7 p.m. Friday, December 17th at the branch at NPW. The funeral mass will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, December 18th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church, with burial to follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Beasley Llewellyn Jr. Beasley Llewellyn Jr., 84, passed away on Friday, December 10th. A graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Wednesday, December 15th at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Pedro Rodriguez II. Pedro Rodriguez II, age 48, of Midland, passed away December 10th. Pedro is survived by daughter Brianna Rodriguez, son Pedro Rodriguez III, one sister, two brothers. Viewing will be held on Wednesday, December 15th, from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., with an evening service at 6 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences can be received at www.assanchezTFH.com. Salvador Flores Roman. Salvador Flores Roman, 83, of Midland, passed away Thursday, December 9th. Viewing will be Wednesday, December 15th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A funeral mass has been set for Thursday, December 16th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial to follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his brothers Armando Roman and Jesus Ruben Roman, sisters Hermila Macias and Romilia Roman, numerous grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Hello, this is Cindy, reading from the Odessa American for Tuesday, December 14th. Contested races abound in county. Multiple candidates file for county judge, commissioner, and JP seats, by Bob Campbell. The March 1st Republican primary ballot filled up Monday, the last day to file, with contested races for county judge, commissioner's precinct 2, district clerk, 244th judicial district judge, and three of the four justice of the peace posts. Filing just hours before the 6 p.m. deadline County Judge Debbie Hayes threw her hat into the ring against Dustin Fawcett, who seeks to unseat her at the end of her first four-year term in the $129,068 a year job. Billy Tripp and Ryan Patton oppose longtime Republican Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons, while Cindy Weir Nutter joined Dennis Jones and Lori Ruiz Crutcher in the race to succeed the retiring 244th District Court Judge James Rush. Incumbent Republican District Clerk Clarissa Webster is challenged by Christina Bryson. Democratic incumbent Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando S. Rodriguez is running for re-election, and his jurisdiction is seeing the unusual event of a Republican, Billy Hall, oppose him in the November 8, 2022 general election for the $65,127 a year job. Rodriguez will also face Savannah Morales and Joe Davila in the March 1st Democratic primary. Precinct 1 JP Terry Lang is opposed by Steve Brannan and Melissa Gonzalez, and Precinct 2 JP Missy Walden, Cynthia Moreno, and Ron Hughes. Longtime Precinct 3 JP Sherwood Cupper did not file for re-election, and Republicans Freddie Redman, Bill Bowen, and Merle Graham seek to replace him, as does Democrat Gerardo Arzate. County Democratic Chairman Hannah Horick said Elizabeth Baeza had filed along with Jesse Porras and Alfred Littleton in the Democratic primary to succeed the retiring Precinct 4 JP Eddie Spivey. "I'm excited to see a robust primary in Precinct 4," Horick said. "It is a sign that we will have a more engaged electorate come March. It's going to be a fun spring." Unopposed Republicans are County Attorney Lee McClendon, County Clerk Jennifer Martin, County Treasurer Cleopatra Calloway, 70th District Court Judge Dan Whalen, 358th District Court Judge John Schrode, Place 1 Court at Law Judge Brooke Hendricks, and Place 2 Court at Law Judge Chris Clark. "It's interesting," said Ector County Republican Chairman Tisha Crow. "We never have this much excitement in the JP races, and we have a Republican running for Precinct 4 Commissioner for the first time. That is very exciting. I expect runoffs in JP Precincts 1, 2, and 3. In the District 81 state rep race, incumbent Brooks Landgraf of Odessa faces Odessan Casey Gray, while Kevin Sparks of Midland, Stormy Bradley of Big Spring, and Jesse Quackenbush and Tim Reed of Amarillo are vying for the Republican nomination to succeed the retiring 31st District State Senator Cal Seliger of Amarillo. Bond Committee meets Thursday. A public meeting of the Ector County Independent School District Bond Advisory Committee to discuss a possible bond issue has been scheduled for 6 p.m. Thursday in the George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa High School cafeteria, 300 East 29th Street. The ECISD Board of Trustees may be present at the meeting of the Ector County ISD Bond Advisory Committee and may take part in the discussions. Work-based learning on agenda. An interlocal agreement between Ector County ISD and the City of Odessa to implement work-based learning opportunities for career and technical education students will be up for consideration by the ECISD Board of Trustees during their 6 p.m. meeting today in the first floor boardroom of the Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Examples of work-based learning sites are the Odessa Animal Shelter, Odessa Fire and Rescue, and Odessa Police Department. Supplemental agenda material says the agreement allows students to work directly at sites affiliated with the City of Odessa, learning directly with employees on site. "It is a tremendous opportunity for real-world application of learning, improved resumes, and networking that would naturally lead to possible post-secondary employment, the material says. This agreement will be in effect from December 14, 2021, until terminated by either party with a 30-day notice. Trustees also will consider a partnership with University of Texas Permian Basin STEM Academy. Through ECISD's Call for Quality Schools, UTPB STEM successfully completed a rigorous process conducted by a diverse committee that included application screening, partner capacity interview, and overall evaluation using a TEA model rubric, the material said. ECISD and the University of Texas of the Permian Basin have a strong partnership represented by student dual credit offerings, opportunity culture collaboration, talent pipeline support, and CTE offerings. This innovative partnership with UTPB STEM will allow ECISD to expand high-quality choice offerings to students in the district with an opportunity to learn on the campus of our local university. Some of the other items on the agenda are recognition of Ismael Lujan, TASSP, Texas Association of Secondary Principals, Outstanding Assistant Principal of the Year, introduction of students' artwork for trustees' Christmas card, take action on superintendent's recommendation to probationary contract of Jovan Jacob Lopez Pando. Quick hits. Empty stocking deadline is Friday. The Empty Stocking Fund needs your help to reach this year's goal of $100,000 with only 3 days left to give. A generous matching challenge from the Sewell family of companies has been offered to match donations up to $50,000. The fund is so close to hitting that $50,000 challenge. Funds stay in Ector County and help needy families who are struggling with a happy Christmas. Through the Empty Stocking Fund, an annual fundraising effort by the Odessa American and the Salvation Army, empty stocking funds go for a good holiday meal and small gifts under the tree. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800. Zip codes for both are 79761. Call the Salvation Army at 332-0738. The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2.1 million. COVID-19 by the numbers. Ector County, 27,276 total cases, 561 deaths. Midland County, 29,988 total cases, 396 deaths. Texas, 4,390,761 total cases, 74,607 deaths. U.S. cases, 49,844,242 total confirmed, and 794,558 deaths. MCH releases COVID figures. Medical Center Hospital has released its inpatient COVID numbers as of 8:30 a.m. Monday. 46 total COVID patients in-house. MedSurge, non-critical, 30 COVID patients. 25 unvaccinated, 4 vaccinated, 1 unknown. Critical care, 16 COVID patients, 6 on ventilator. 12 unvaccinated, 4 vaccinated. Of the 6 COVID patients on ventilator, 5 unvaccinated, 1 vaccinated. Age ranges of COVID patients, 21 years old to 91 years old. Patients from outside Ector County include 2 from Fort Stockton, 1 from Hugo, Oklahoma, 1 from Lovington, New Mexico, 6 from Midland. Junior League of Odessa horse-drawn carriage rides. The Junior League of Odessa will once again be hosting horse-drawn carriage rides through Shiloh in Emerald Forest. This will be the 4th year Junior League of Odessa has offered carriage rides to the community. This year, there will be 6 different evenings of rides. Each ride is about 20 minutes long. The event will be held on today through Thursday. The rides begin each evening at 6:30 p.m., and the last ride will be 8:50 p.m. Available carriages have seating for 4, 6, and 12 people. Tickets are now on sale for the community. All of the proceeds raised from ticket sales will benefit JLO. For more information, call 432-332-0095 or email carriages@jlodessa.org. Letters to Santa. Drop off your letter to Santa through December 20th and he will write you back. Mailbox, northwest corner of 4th Street and Grant Avenue. Make sure to include a return address to receive a letter back from Santa. Postage is not necessary. Kids Clown Contest. The Sand Hills Stock Show Rodeo are taking entries for Kids Clown Contest for ages 10 and under through Wednesday. Parents, send a photo and video of your clown dressed to impress. SSSR will choose the top 4 entries to perform opening night. The stock show and rodeo will take place January 5th through the 15th, 2022, at the Ector County Coliseum. For more information, call 432-366-3951. Email sandhillsrodeo@cable1.net or visit sandhillssr.com. Downtown Christmas Party. Crossroads, 1000 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled a downtown Christmas party for the whole family at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday. There will be games, singing, giveaway prizes, hot chocolate, and Christmas lights. Hope Kids Pajama Party. Hope Alive Church, 305 East 19th Street, has scheduled Hope Kids Pajama Party, Polar Express, starting at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday. Students may wear their pajamas. Ladies Breakaway Roping. The Sand Hills Stock Show Rodeo Ladies Breakaway Roping Entry Submission will open Wednesday and close at 8 p.m. January 1st. The Ladies Breakaway Roping event will take place at 9 a.m. January 9th at the Ector County Coliseum. Fee $350, 3 head, top 15 short round. Late entries will be accepted through 8 a.m. January 9th. Late fee is $50. Enter 2 times. Cattle will be shoot run and short cattle will be fresh. American qualifier entry fee is $265, cash only. Text Ladies Entries to Nancy McCain at 432-425-3898. The stock show and rodeo is scheduled January 5th through the 15th. For more information, call 432-366-3951. Caregiver Support Group Meeting. Hospice of Odessa, 219 West 4th Street, has scheduled a caregiver support group meeting from noon to 1 p.m. Wednesday. The event is designed for individuals who are actively caring for their loved ones. For more information, call 432-653-1737. Tis the season to support survivors. The Crisis Center of West Texas has scheduled Tis the Season to support survivors and children this holiday for those looking for a way to help. Angel Tree. Drop off gifts, unwrapped or in bags, during business hours through Thursday at McAllister's Deli, 2002 East 42nd Street. Drop off donations, new toys, home goods, or hygiene items for clients in any of the donation boxes located at HQ Chiropractic, 4100 Bonham Avenue, Dr. John M. Weaver, DDS, 2000 North Grandview Avenue, Jackson Hewitt Tax Service, 3119 East University Boulevard, Suite A, and Runke's Extreme Cycles, 12406 West Highway 80 East. Coat Drive, deliver new and gently used coats through CCWTX Partners, EXP Realty at Desert Ridge, 2314 Boys Drive. CCWTX Admin Office. For those who can't make it to drop off locations, visit the CCWTX Admin Office at 910B South Grant Avenue, or donate online at ccwtx.org. For more information, call 432-333-2527. Pfizer COVID-19 Pediatric Vaccine Clinic. The Ector County Health Department has scheduled a Pfizer COVID-19 Pediatric Vaccine Clinic for ages 5 through 11 from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday at Murray Fly Elementary, 11688 West Westview Drive. ECHD will be offering first and second doses. Parent, guardian must be present. For more information, call 432-498-4141 or visit co.ector.tx.us. Junior League Odessa Open Enrollment. Odessa Chamber of Commerce, 700 North Grant Avenue, has opened enrollment for 2022 Junior League Odessa. The 2022 session schedule for junior leadership is listed as follows. January 22nd, retreat from 8:25 a.m. to 4 p.m. January 24th, media and education from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. January 31st, law enrollment and government from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. February 7th, medical and social services from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. February 14th, arts and culture from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. February 22nd, graduation from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. The junior leadership is free to join. The enrollment deadline for junior leadership is at 5 p.m. Friday. To enroll today or for more information, contact Lynn Van Amberg at 432-333-7862 or lynnva@odessachamber.com. Southwest Holiday Youth Convention. Life Challenge and Southwest Youth Conference has scheduled the Southwest Holiday Youth Convention from 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Friday, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday, and 2 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Sunday at Life Challenge, 4500 North Grandview Avenue. Special guests will include Cornelius Williams and Victor Jackson. Afterburners will be volleyball and food trucks Friday, and coffee, s'mores, and a bonfire Saturday. Admission is free, however, registration is required. To register, visit tinyurl.com/25TAJTU8. Cookies and Cocoa. First Presbyterian Church, 1401 North Sam Houston Avenue, has scheduled Cookies and Cocoa from 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Saturday. Each child will get a box of cookies to decorate during the telling of the Christmas story. Free family event. Visit tinyurl.com/2p8nrdhd. Teddy Bear Tea. Downtown Odessa, Inc., 305 East 5th Street, has scheduled a teddy bear tea at 10 a.m. and noon Saturday. Pre-registration is required. A commemorative teddy bear will be given to every attendee. The children will be read a story by Santa. All families in attendance will receive a free souvenir photo with Santa as well. To register or for more information, call 432-335-4682. Winterfest Holiday Market. Downtown Odessa, Inc. has scheduled a Winterfest Holiday Market from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, downtown Odessa. There will be the annual Teddy Bear Tea taking place inside the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, as well as a DJ, children's activities, and a free holiday movie fit for the whole family outside amidst the market. To become a vendor, register online. To register or for more information, visit downtownodessatx.com/winterfest. Odessa writer engaged for podcast soap opera. Odessa resident Raven Wisdom has joined the writing team for Restless Shores, a podcast soap opera. Despite COVID, Restless Shores is about to begin its fourth season, has 83,000 total downloads, has been heard in over 3,000 distinct cities, is in 107 countries, and all 50 United States. Restless Shores broke new ground as the first serialized scripted podcast soap opera. Based in West Bath, Maine, Restless Shores centers on a billion-dollar pharmaceutical company and the shenanigans of the family that runs it. Scandal, intrigue, and salaciousness, 15 minutes at a time. Visit restless-shores.com. Air Force discharges 27 for refusal to get COVID vaccine. The Associated Press, Washington. The Air Force has discharged 27 people for refusing to get the COVID-19 vaccine, making them what officials believe are the first service members to be removed for disobeying the mandate to get the shots. The Air Force gave its forces until November 2nd to get the vaccine, and thousands have either refused or sought an exemption. Air Force spokeswoman Ann Stefanik said Monday that these are the first airmen to be administratively discharged for reasons involving the vaccine. She said all of them were in their first term of enlistment, so they were younger, lower-ranking personnel. And while the Air Force does not disclose what type of discharge a service member gets, legislation working its way through Congress limits the military to giving troops in vaccine refusal cases an honorable discharge or general discharge under honorable conditions. The Pentagon earlier this year required the vaccine for all members of the military, including active duty, National Guard, and the reserves. Each of the services set its own deadlines and procedures for the mandate, and the Air Force set the earliest deadline. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has said the vaccine is critical to maintaining the health of the force and its ability to respond to a national security crisis. None of the 27 airmen sought any type of exemption, medical, administrative, or religious, Stefanik said. Several officials from the other services said they believe that so far only the Air Force has gotten this far along in the process and discharged people over the vaccine refusal. As a result, they were formally removed from service for failure to obey an order. Stefanik said it is also possible that some had other infractions on their records, but all had the vaccine refusal as one of the elements of their discharge. It is not unusual for members of the military to be thrown out of the service for disobeying an order. Discipline is a key tenet of the armed services. As a comparison, Stefanik said that in the first three quarters of 2021, about 1,800 airmen were discharged for failure to follow orders. According to the latest Air Force data, more than 1,000 airmen have refused the shot, and more than 4,700 are seeking a religious exemption. As of last week, a bit more than 97% of the active duty Air Force had gotten at least one shot. Members of the Navy and the Marine Corps had until November 28th to get the shots, and their reserve members have until December 28th. Army active duty soldiers have until Wednesday, and members of the Army, National Guard, and the reserves have the most time to be vaccinated, with a deadline of next June 30th. Across the military, the vaccine reaction has mirrored that of society as a whole, with thousands seeking exemptions or refusing the shots. But overall, the percentage of troops, particularly active duty members, who quickly got the shots exceeds the nationwide numbers. As of December 10th, the Pentagon said that 96.4% of active duty personnel have gotten at least one shot. The number plummets to about 74%, however, when the Guard and Reserve are included. According to the Centers for Disease Control, about 72% of the U.S. population, 18 and older, have gotten at least one shot. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has made it clear that the Guard and Reserve are also subject to the mandate and has warned that those who fail to comply risk their continuing members in the military. But that has proven to be contentious.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.